Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
And I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
And here we are recording on Sunday morning.
Sunday morning at 9-something.
9-something, 9:47.
9:47.
So we're missing a few soccer matches right now. I wanted to see Leicester City playing, but that's okay. It's all right. I'm here for you and for the listeners. And
it's a law firm in town for the people.
That's right. So
you're the mental health analog of Morgan and Morgan.
That's right. But no, we're here on Sunday recording, and we're not on Mixlr for a variety of reasons. We're recording on Sunday because I was subpoenaed to go testify in a hearing, a court hearing on Friday, which went well, I think.
The deposition was long.
The deposition a couple weeks ago was really long. That's why we had to record on over the weekend a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And so this time it was because of the actual court case. So, but it went well. And then we're not on Mixlr because we have no internet.
And that is a game changer.
It's frustrating.
Right.
It's frustrating, to say the least.
Right. But this has been a very busy week for Psychological Associates of Central Florida.
It has,
hasn't it?
And for Paideia, and for every aspect of everything we do, it's been busy. Because between the two of us, I think we've only been in the office maybe 2 full days this week.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
and presentations, and we've had the good fortune of, you were in an education forum on Monday night.
Monday night, and then
talking about high stakes testing.
Right.
Uses and abuses of high stakes testing.
Right.
Very helpful. Very
and then informative. On Tuesday, you traveled to Jacksonville to do a workshop all day on Wednesday.
Wednesday morning, did a workshop to about 80 school psychologists and social workers.
Which is very nice.
Very helpful, very good, very hospitable group. Nice people, very, very concerned about issues related to mental health in school-age children.
Right. And then I taught Wednesday night, you taught Thursday morning, and then I did a workshop for some social workers on Thursday afternoon. And then,
back here on Friday with no internet. So we returned to the office on Friday, and the internet clicked off at about 7:30 a.m.
Well, you know what? I wrote a blog post about this on thementalbreakdown.com because it was funny that, Friday morning I went straight to court, and when I got there I realized that I had not printed out the subpoena. So I had no idea which courtroom to go to. And over in, it was a case over in Tampa, so there, it's not like Polk County where, there's a number of judges and everything, but in Hillsborough County, a much more dense county, they have a lot more judges and a lot more courtrooms, and so I had no idea where to go. And I was able to jump on the internet, get my email. I could open up the subpoena, and I knew exactly where to go. And I'm checking my email and everything while I'm there, and then I get a message from the office: we have no internet. I can't do anything.
Right.
And so I rushed back over here as soon as I finished testifying. And sure enough, and we still have no internet.
Well,
we are 2 days later.
For some strange reason, both Bright House and Verizon, which are two of the big providers here, are both transitioning right now.
Yeah.
And Bright House had some problem in Tampa or Sarasota on Friday, so we had no internet home. And Verizon had some problem because they're transitioning to a new company or something.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating when you can't get on the internet whenever you want to. So
right, and you don't really realize how dependent you are on it until something like that happens.
It's like losing your cell phone.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
it was so frustrating. Still is frustrating.
Right.
Because
it's out today again.
It's out. It's still out today. And when I spoke with whoever that person was at Frontier at 6 o'clock this morning, he said that we still have no idea when it will be back. And so, thinking about having office hours tomorrow with all of our patient files and everything that are nicely stored in a paperless capacity, we have no way to access any of that stuff. So, good times.
I'm wondering if we're being billed for these days that we don't have service.
I've already talked to you. Miss Rebecca has already said, you let me know.
Okay.
Because we will verify that.
Right.
So, thank goodness for our office staff here because they're fantastic.
Frustrating, but it's good to be back sort of online.
Right.
Back talking to people again. So
right, and we're at least recording today, so that's right. That's good. So hopefully, you know, everybody that is a typical listener on Mixlr, they can get us on iTunes and check us out there. So, right. But today. Today is our golden anniversary.
It is our golden, that's right. Golden
episode number 50.
Right.
And, you know, though, it was a little bit confusing because I was looking on iTunes and it says that today's episode 51. And the reason it says it's episode 51 is because we recorded a supplement to one of our
right.
Previous podcasts.
I forgot
and so
about that.
It kind of went under that other one, but it counted as a separate one. So on iTunes, it will count as number 51, but this is technically episode 50.
So typical of men, we forgot the anniversary, right?
Yeah, we missed the anniversary. All We're a week off. Luckily, though, it's just us, so
right.
Nobody else really cares. We don't have to account for it to anybody else.
Right.
But before we really get into the podcast today, I want to also thank a couple of people who wrote us some very nice reviews on iTunes.
By all means.
One has the user ID of The Pins, P-I-N-Z, wrote a very nice, thank you so much. That was a great
It's really good hearing
comment.
From
you. Yeah, that was great. And the
appreciate
other
appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, and the other is Frog Addict 85. Now, I'm not sure where he got his user ID from.
Right.
But that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. He did love that one just because of the name.
That's right. But both you guys, guys or gals, I'm not sure,
wrote
great reviews, and we really appreciate it. And it was very helpful and actually gave us some ideas for future podcasts. So that was great. So thank you guys so much,
for
your comments.
Yep.
Now, today's podcast is going to, as we promised last week, is going to look at some lifestyle issues, sleep, exercise, and diet. And we talked about it last week as it relates to ADHD.
Right.
And as we were preparing and thinking about today's podcast, we're thinking, well, this is really relevant to other things as well, not just ADHD.
To any number of childhood disorders. As most of you know, most of the mental health issues that we deal with throughout our lives really begin during childhood and adolescence.
Right.
Okay, so we're talking about these things in teenagers, children and teenagers, but of course it applies across the lifespan. Because most of these disorders first appear during childhood and adolescence.
Right. So, right. And so they change over time a little bit.
Right.
But they continue, and sometimes they improve a little bit, and sometimes they get worse.
I want to underline that point just for a minute, because one of the individuals who wrote in last week mentioned that his or her diagnosis has changed over time.
Right.
And we want to caution our readers not to be too surprised if that happens.
Right.
I saw a family recently where the child has ADHD and dad has ADHD. Well, I should say dad had ADHD, but his, as an adult, is now shifting more toward depression than ADHD, which happens because the brain changes. You know, you've all heard of brain plasticity. So we know that the brain changes over time. And so don't be alarmed if your symptoms change over time. It's not uncommon.
Right. And I think that that's an important point because, you know, unlike any other branch of medicine, you know, our diagnoses, our what we talk about and treat are based upon symptoms. We don't really have, diagnostic concrete types of assessments we can do or tests we can do to identify a mental health problem. You know, we use I mentioned this in my workshop to the social workers on Thursday, you know, although we need to be careful when we use things like, oh, well, it's a chemical imbalance.
Right.
Well, that implies that we can assess chemicals to see that there's an imbalance, but,
and
but
we
really
can
we
it.
Can't.
Right. Yeah. Or we say that something is in this part of the brain that you can make somehow put you in a scanner of some type and find it, and it just doesn't work that way.
Right. Yeah. It's very different, and and you know, the other example, of course, is anxiety disorders.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I think is fascinating about anxiety disorders is, regardless of the disorder, regardless of the diagnosis, the symptoms are all the same.
That's right. That's right.
Your diagnosis comes about based upon what triggers those symptoms, and that's That's right. really fascinating. And it can change over time.
Yeah. And the other thing to remember is that over time, we get affected by lifestyle choices
right.
and marriages and children. And, you know, if you're 25 and everything's going well, that's good. But if you're 35 and you suddenly lose your job, that can affect your symptoms. You
right.
know, how you react to that is going to affect your symptoms. So don't be alarmed. Seek advice, of course, but don't be alarmed if the symptoms change over time.
Right. And that's a great transition to what we're going to actually talk
right,
about
right.
today for mm-hmm. episode 50. And that is, you know, there are things that there are lifestyle things that we experience, that we make decisions to do or make decisions right. not to do mm-hmm. that have a direct effect, direct right. impact on our mental health
right.
and our in any mental illness that we may present with or anything like that. And so we're going to talk about the three biggies, mm-hmm. Sleep, exercise, and diet. We're going to talk about those today because these are oftentimes decisions that we make. These are some mm-hmm. things that we have control over mm-hmm. that can really have a profound
right.
impact on our mental health.
That's right. And I remember when we wrote a book that's currently, we're revising this book, called The Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child. And in that book, you mentioned at one point, we were talking about using behaviorism,
right.
reward and punish. And as you said in that book, that's what we were taught.
Right.
You know, and so
yeah.
that's what we did.
Right.
Okay. And so much of what we've done in mental health is based on what we're taught to do, whether it's behaviorism or whatever. There are these certain approaches that we use in counseling. But what we have come to learn about over time and with experience is that we also need to consider things like sleep and diet and other issues that are also affecting these symptoms, that are also
right.
affecting a diagnosis and that affect our treatment. You can do all the behaviorism in the world, but if a person has a food allergy,
right.
it's going to be the food allergy
right.
that takes precedence. And so we've learned over time that we have to be mindful of the contributions of these more physical things
right.
And how they're affecting mental health.
Right, right. Absolutely. So let's begin with sleep. Okay. Sleep is a good place to start because
wow.
I didn't get much last night. Did you?
We don't get much.
Yeah. I didn't get
we
much
don't
last
get
night.
Much sleep.
We had a my son had a soccer match yesterday.
Right.
And
where was it?
I'll tell you. Whew. It for some reason the new league that we're in had decided to put the team farthest to the west, that was us, against the team that was the farthest to the southeast in Florida. And so we drove 2 hours to play a 70-minute match. We played in Melbourne,
oh, okay.
South Melbourne.
Yeah. Right.
So we played, we drove 2 hours, played a 70-minute match, and then drove 2 hours home. And
long day.
You know, it was a long day, and it makes you tired, and it wears you out. And what you can see is as days go like that,
mm-hmm.
we've all had those kinds of days, you know, by the end of the day, we're all a little crabby, we're all a little irritable,
right.
we're all a little cranky,
mm-hmm.
and that's because we're tired.
Right.
And we fail to sometimes recommend the impact that fatigue and sleep deprivation has on our behavior, our emotions, and our mental health in general.
Right.
We don't recognize or don't, well, I guess it's not that really that we don't recognize. It's that we don't give enough credit to the impact that it has. You know, we sort of carried a badge of honor. Hey, I only slept,
yeah.
you know, 4 hours last night because, man, I really wanted to study for this test.
Right.
Well, you know, if you really wanted to do well in the test, you probably should have slept a little bit more.
Right, right.
You mentioned the education forum this past week that I had the opportunity to sit on that forum, and you know one of the questions they asked was, "What can we do for our kids to help prepare them for testing?" And I said, "You know, we do this.
Mm-hmm.
We always say these things like, well, we'll make sure they have a good breakfast, make sure they get a good night's sleep. Well, why should you only do that on a test day?"
Yeah, we have these testing rituals.
Yeah,
you know, like what we eat, how much we drink, how much we sleep, and as you rightfully pointed out, you should be doing that every day,
right?
Not just I mean, what? Those are the healthy things to do.
Yeah, the kid wakes up on test day, I get breakfast this morning? What is that all about? You mean,
right.
I don't want to go to bed at 8 o'clock tonight just because I have a test tomorrow. Why do I have to go to bed that early? So, but we should always have good sleep hygiene. We should always have good sleep routines and patterns because it's important that we get enough sleep every day, not just on days that we have tests or just on days that we need to perform at a particularly different level or whatever.
That's right.
So good sleep hygiene begins with a couple of things. One of course, is getting adequate sleep.
Right.
And, well, I guess that's the ultimate outcome, is that we want to make sure we get adequate sleep. But how do we do that? You know, we fail to recognize some of the very common and very obvious factors that influences how well we sleep.
Right.
I think on a previous podcast, you mentioned this, and I think it's well worth pointing out again. As we go through, as we sleep through the night, our sleep patterns reach closer to wake, and then it drops down to very far away from wake. And so we have this very deep sleep that we go through. But then there are times, you know, three or four times a night that we get to almost a full waking time. And that's the time during the night that we move and that we kind of reposition ourselves and those kinds of things. And we kind of maybe get a glance at the clock or
one
whatever. But you pointed out that, in a previous podcast, that those of us who go to sleep with the TV on, when you reach that point where you're almost awake and you hear talking, you hear the TV on, it's going to catch your attention and it's going to make you open up a little bit more.
It arouses your brain just enough to go from almost being awake to being awake.
Right.
Right.
So those of you who like going to sleep with the TV on, and that could be fine depending on what you're listening to and things like that. But most TVs nowadays have a sleep timer. And so you set the timer so that, you know, in an hour or whatever, the TV turns off by itself. And so then you can go to sleep with that sound on.
Right.
When I used to sleep with the TV, I would have it on like the Weather Channel because there are periods where the Weather Channel the Weather Channel that I would listen to would just play music while it was sort of showing the weather for the next few days and stuff. And it was really just the music I was listening to. But to have it where it then shuts off, you know, by the time that I should be asleep.
Yeah, because one of the things we want to do, and I know I do the same thing, you have to sort of shut down from your day.
Right.
And you and I and most people who are overextended and over-aroused, we tend to be on. You know, we say we're on all the time. And one of the important things...
Oh, your glasses.
One of the important things is to put them on. One of the important things about sleep is transitioning to sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, we struggle with children who don't transition to another activity. We have to help them transition into sleep mode from awake mode. And what we do as adults is we use TV for that purpose. It gets us thinking about something else.
Right.
And once we shut down from work, then it's easier to fall asleep.
Right, exactly.
The problem, of course, is the TV then wakes us when we get to one of those peaks of arousal. And so I like that idea of, because I've been awakened all the time by the TV, but it's an old one that doesn't have a timer on.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I need to get one with a timer.
You need to get one with a timer. Or there's lots of apps. Like I found this new app called Windy, W-I-N-D-Y.
Windy.
And and all it does is it just plays sounds.
So music. It's like white noise?
It's like white noise. It's like sort of outside sounds. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different ones that you can have it play, and it has a nice little scene, you know, if you want a little bit of light in the room, but it's very nice and relaxing and calming, and it turns off. It has an automatic timer to turn off in an hour and a half.
Yeah, one of the things that happens, you know, commercials are at a higher volume.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to be. FTC it has a rule against commercials being, but they are louder.
Right.
Bright House commercials are incredibly loud.
Right.
So if you're in one of these sleep cycles and a Bright House commercial comes on, you're going to wake up.
Exactly.
I mean, it might wake up the whole house. But also certain music. I'll watch the movie channel, Turner Classic Movies, and every once in a while they'll put a silent film on.
Yeah.
But they have very loud piano music.
Yes. You know? Yes.
And they get these chase scenes where they start with this real loud, and that wakes you up. Yeah. You know, so you need to be careful.
A silent movie that's too loud. That's sort of paradoxical.
That's kind of an anomaly. But you're right. It's very helpful for transitioning to sleep, but then that same thing will awaken you because of your sleep cycles.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So be careful. So go ahead and do it for transition, but remember that it's going to be that's going to probably awaken you during the night.
Right. And in addition to sound, there's some other things that you want to think about, of course. Temperature.
Yeah.
It's hard to go to sleep when the temperature's off.
Right.
When we fall asleep, our body tends to drop in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So cooler rooms are a little bit easier to go to sleep in.
Right.
As opposed to hotter rooms, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to get comfortable when you're hot and that kind of stuff. So you want to drop the temperature down just a little bit when you're going to sleep. Also, light.
Light.
This is a big problem with kids, because mm-hmm. especially kids who are a little bit anxious about the dark, you know, they want to have some light on. It's really important that we moderate that light.
Right.
Again, if you could have a light with a timer on it so that it turns off after mm-hmm. After so much time, so that by the time he gets to sleep, you know, the light turns off, and then anytime he gets close to waking, that it's still dark in the room. Being careful of, you know, having doors open so that the hallway light can come in and everything, because not just hallway light comes in, but also sounds from the rest of the house come in and those kinds of things. So, but light is really an important issue, and they're researching it more and more, because what we're finding is that in our age of technology, those of us who go to sleep with our iPads or are laying in bed, at least, with our iPads in our lap or our laptops or something like that, certain light, in particular blue light, from the screens, and nothing fancy about blue light. It's not. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about like UV lights or anything like that. I'm just talking about the color blue has an effect on you and is likely to keep you awake.
Right.
And that should make sense from an evolutionary perspective. You know, hundreds of years ago, our bodies, we lived our lives by the sun.
Right.
And so when the sun came up, we woke up. And when the sun went down, we went to bed. And mm-hmm. the light that sort of let us know what was going on was the light from the sky, which is blue.
Our brains like routines.
It sure does.
Because these routines come from the day-night cycle, seasonal cycles, temperatures rising and falling, and our brains get used to those kind of cycles.
Right.
And the day-night cycle is one of those things that we synchronize to. You know, if you want to know about good sleep habits, who sleeps well? Well, in my world, the Amish sleep well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we talk about this with kids with bipolar disorder. Why do they sleep well? Because they go to sleep when it gets dark and they get up when it gets light.
Right.
And so they have this very routine sleep cycle that the brain really likes.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
We have lights and devices and sounds that keep us awake artificially.
Yeah. Yet another issue with technology.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are we handicapped by it when we don't have internet, but it keeps us awake because never before have we had a technology that can make it light in our world 24 hours a day.
That's right. And the substance that helps us fall asleep is melatonin.
Right.
And blue light interferes with the release of melatonin.
Yeah.
So the very thing that you need, you're preventing because of the blue light.
Right. Melatonin, they sometimes call it the Dracula hormone.
Right.
Because it only comes out when it's dark.
Right.
And so when you have that blue light in your face,
doesn't you're going let to the, inhibit the release of melatonin.
The Dracula stays in his coffin,
mm-hmm.
so you don't get to use it. And now sleep is implicated in several mental illnesses,
mm-hmm.
and mental health problems. This is especially important when we deal and work with patients who have bipolar disorder.
Right.
Bipolar disorder, one of the key features of mania and depression in general is interruptions with sleep. And so when I work with my patients who are struggling with bipolar disorder and depression, one of the things that we really work on is staying to a good sleep routine.
That's right.
You know, you got to make sure you get enough sleep.
It's so important with those people, mm-hmm. with people with bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
So
you got to make sure you're getting enough sleep. And sure enough, it shouldn't be too surprising, sure enough, when people with bipolar disorder are able to stay on a good sleep cycle, it reduces their moods, mood swings, their mood dysregulation. It helps with all of that, and it can even many times prevent them from going into a manic episode.
That's right. We talk about the Amish. There's a researcher from the University of Pennsylvania who's been studying Amish children who have bipolar disorder, who have rage attacks and irritability. And one of the things she discovered, but they do better. The Amish children do better. Their symptoms are not as severe as children, as modern children. And one of the reasons she believes is that they sleep better.
Yeah.
You know, again, yeah. Go to sleep when it gets dark, get up when it gets light. And so their sleep patterns are better, and so their symptoms are not quite as severe.
Right.
We all know that if a baby doesn't sleep enough, it gets very irritable. Right. When an adult doesn't sleep enough, we get very irritable. So if you tend to have a disorder where irritability is one of the symptoms, a lack of sleep is going to increase the irritability and increase the symptoms.
Right. Mm-hmm. So as... As valiant of an idea as it is to sacrifice sleep for work and to do all that, you know, it really is important that we make sure that we get enough sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are those estimates. Okay, hey, you should get at least 8 hours of sleep per night. Mm-hmm. There are some people who really need 8 hours of sleep per night.
Right.
You know, they need that. There are others who don't. Mm-hmm. You know, some people do. And I think that for myself, for example, I function pretty well as long as I get about 6 hours of sleep.
Right.
I'm okay as long as I get about 6 hours of sleep. Right. When I start getting less than that, especially if I get less than that over a couple of days,
right.
I can tell my level of functioning mm-hmm. dwindles.
You become much less efficient.
Right.
You know, you can't get as... I mean, you're putting in the time, but you're not getting as much done.
Right. And so you know, you got to know yourself. For our kids, you know, our kids don't know themselves very well yet. And so we need to make sure that they're getting enough sleep. And you need to learn from your child. I'm befuddled by patients sometimes, or parents sometimes, when they come in with their kids and they're like, well, you know, he gets up at like 4 o'clock every morning. Mm-hmm. Well, what time do you put him to bed? Well, he goes to bed about 7:30. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, let's not be so rigid about that kind of thing. If you want him to sleep a little bit later in the morning, so you don't have to get up at four,
right?
Put him to bed a little bit later. Right. Like, you know, keep him up till 9, and then he'll sleep till
7 to 4 is 9 hours, and most kids in school should have about 8 or 9 hours of sleep. Young kids should have 9 to 10. Older kids should have 8 to 9.
Right. So adjust. You know, we don't have to be so rigid mm-hmm. on what time is bedtime and what time is wake up time. Mm-hmm. You know, look at your schedule, see what time do you have to get up in the morning? What time do you have to get going? Okay, well, if you have to get up at 6 o'clock, what time do you need to be asleep by? And then sort of reverse engineer it from there.
Right.
My kids, for example, my kids are sort of like me. They function relatively well mm-hmm. without needing that much sleep. And we've kind of figured it out over time. Mm-hmm. And so we adjust our schedules accordingly. So, you know, you can be flexible with it, but you have to make sure that you're getting enough sleep. If you find that your child is really irritable, really cranky, the first thing I'm going to go to is sleep.
Right.
You know, let's just make sure that you're getting enough sleep first, mm-hmm. And then move from there.
Yeah, when I hear that kids are irritable and cranky and irascible and difficult, let's address the sleep issue. Let's start with that. Because it's an easy one to deal with. There's no medication, doesn't cost anything. You're going to change your evening routine to help with transition. But it's sort of a win-win. They should be sleeping better anyway. And I would guess that if you can get your children sleeping better, you're going to sleep better.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So
So sleep.
Well worth the effort.
So we mentioned sleep first because that's one that it has a profound effect across lots of things: irritability, mood, energy level, thinking ability, problem solving,
memory.
Right. All of those things mm-hmm. are affected by how much getting enough sleep.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And we have to work on, you know, we talk about kids, you know, we talk about foods with children, how important nutrition is, and mm-hmm. clean your plate and eat the right foods. We should take the same approach to sleep.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly important aspect of their life, and they have to respect the process of sleep, and they have to learn how to sleep well. It's as important as eating well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so the second mm-hmm. lifestyle thing we're going to talk about today is exercise.
Good.
Yeah. So, again, this is sort of perhaps to some of you a no-brainer, but exercise is really important not only to our physical health, and it not only helps with cardiovascular. It helps with, you know, the way that your heart works, the way that your how efficient your lungs are. But it helps with your mental health, your brain functioning as well. So when we think about exercise, I think that a lot of people work from the perspective or sort of hold this belief that, okay, I have to exercise 30 minutes every day. Mm-hmm. Or I have to have a membership to a gym because I need to go in and I need to work out at the gym every day. I need to have a personal trainer and I just can't dedicate that much time. No. That, you know, the research says that you get adequate benefit from exercise as long as you're exercising 30 minutes at a time, three or four times a week.
Right.
Okay, that's really all that's necessary. That's right. Mm-hmm. So an hour and a half to 2 hours a week is really all that's necessary to get an adequate amount of exercise. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about working out at the gym. We're not talking about weightlifting. We're just talking about a moderate intensity walk. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a 30-minute walk at a decent pace, you're not just leisurely strolling, but if you walk at a decent pace mm-hmm. for 30 minutes, three or four times a week, that's adequate. You don't have to, you know, some people need the structure of a gym. Some people need the obligation of saying, okay, I have a personal trainer that, and I'm scheduled to be there at this time. So, I got it. Some people need that because otherwise they will talk themselves out of it or they will otherwise avoid mm-hmm. the exercise. So we recognize that some people need that kind of thing, but otherwise it's other than that needed obligation, there really is no reason that you have to do anything else except for, you know, that brisk walk.
Right. Right.
So, mm-hmm. So when it comes to, okay, what do I need to do to exercise? That's really it. You know, you don't really need to do much more than that. Now, if you do more, that's good, but you don't have to.
And also, there is this obvious connection between exercise and sleep.
Right.
Many people, you know, if you're sitting for hours and hours and hours, you're not getting tired, mm-hmm. and therefore it's going to be harder for you to fall asleep. Whereas if you do some vigorous exercise every day, as long as you do it early enough, you don't want to exercise and then try to go to sleep. But as long as you're exercising early enough, it's helping you to relax. And it's helping you to be tired. You know, frequently we'll have children who come in and parents will say they're not sleeping well. And then we find out that they're sitting around watching TV and playing video games right. for 5 or 6 hours. Well, they're not tired. I mean, they haven't done anything to wear themselves out. Cooking dinner, doing dishes, cleaning the house. And they're not getting tired. Parents get tired because they're more active. They're busier. So kids have to be exercising. The other thing about young children, we talk about play and play as exercise.
Right.
One of the things that kids do with unstructured exercise, unstructured play, is that play allows kids to do more than they would normally do.
Right.
If they're playing a sport, frequently they will play the sport within their ability level. Whereas when they're playing, they're stretching themselves because they're pretending to be something, you know, superhero
right.
or an athlete that they're really not. And they tend to stretch themselves right. a little bit more when they play. So it's a good idea just to let some kids just go out and play.
Right.
You know, because they'll extend themselves just a little bit farther and play, make themselves tired, and then they go to sleep. Exercise also increases appetite, so they tend to eat more and better.
Right. Yeah, so. I like that idea about with the imaginative play
right.
because,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're pretending like you're Superman, you're going to try to run faster than you otherwise would because, right. hey, Superman runs fast.
That's right.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does everything faster.
Right. So it's good, that imaginative play, mm-hmm. like you said, it stretches their performance.
Right. That's right.
Without mm-hmm. anybody having to tell them, I want you to run really hard. They're
going
to say,
right.
you know, just say, pretend like you're Superman, and they're going to run
that's
harder.
Right. Ride your bike. You know, they ride their bike faster, and they,
right.
you know, they do everything faster because they're pretending to be, or like kids playing tennis. If you pretend to be a professional player, you're going to swing harder at the ball.
Right, you know? So, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good advice there because I know that a lot of, especially younger kids, are really going to benefit from that.
Right.
So, going off another point that you made, this is another situation where you need to know yourself a little bit. Some people do better to exercise in the morning.
That's right.
Because it gets them going. It gets them, mm-hmm. it sort of begins the process of waking themselves up and getting themselves going. Mm-hmm. Other people do much better in the evening, as a wind down. You know, let's
you
get
have
rid of
to
this
know,
extra energy.
Absolutely, you have to know your best exercise time. I used to run. I'm going to start again. I tell you?
No,
Dr. Bose said I could.
All right.
So, when I ran, and I ran every day 5 miles, I could only do it in the morning.
Right.
I could not run in the afternoon. Mm. Every once in a while, I could run in the late afternoon, but it was really a struggle.
Right.
My best running time was in the morning.
Yeah.
And people need to know what's your best exercise time.
Right.
The other thing besides time of day is we should talk about building the exercise habit.
Right.
Because
absolutely.
It takes time to, it's a habit, and it might take you 20 or 30 days. You know, don't get discouraged after 4 or 5 or 6 days that you're not exercising.
Right.
It takes 30 days to build a habit.
Yeah, and you know, and that's another great point, because it also, while it takes that much time to build the habit, mm-hmm. please recognize that it takes far less time to get out of the habit. So you need to you got to make sure you stick to it. So we talked about how I ran that half marathon whenever
have
that was.
Have you run since then?
I have not run since then, because I took some time off because my body needed to recover, and mm-hmm. my body did not like me too much after that.
Yeah, slapped you around.
And I have not run since then, and now it's really tough for me. Now I got to build the habit again.
You're much younger than I am, so you can't appreciate this. I ran at least 5 days a week. You know, you're supposed to take mm-hmm. a day or two off a week. I ran for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a normal, whenever I traveled, I threw my shoes and my shorts in the bag, okay? Mm-hmm. I always, winter, summer, it didn't matter where I was, vacations, no matter where I was, I ran, okay? And I did that for about 30 years.
Mm.
And then I had to have knee surgery, mm-hmm. and I haven't run since.
Yeah.
It's a 30-year habit went away in 10 days.
Yeah, you can lose
the
habit very
hurry.
Quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you build that habit, you do need to make sure that you maintain it.
Right.
It's easier to maintain, but as soon as you allow yourself to break from it, like looking back, what I should have done is, instead of running that much time, I should have at least gone for the walk and sort of continued the
to
process of
mm-hmm.
yeah using that time.
That's right.
Because what I've done, and what we often do, is we fill that time with something else.
That's right.
And,
you get out of the habit.
Right.
Right. And and you have to keep going. And you don't always want to exercise every day. You have to force yourself.
Right.
Many days, you have to force yourself to do it. Now, if you're doing vigorous exercise and you have pain,
take
a day off.
Yeah.
But if you're just walking and there's no pain involved, you got to make yourself do it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because it's so easy to get out of the habit. So please keep in mind how easy it is to get out of the habit.
Right. And so when we think about exercise, obviously everyone knows, everyone that's listening, I'm sure, knows, you know, it releases endorphins, it helps with oxytocin, it helps with lots of things that our body needs to run efficiently, to run in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. Not only physically, but cognitively as well. We think better when we've exercised. There's been plenty of research studies that mm-hmm. demonstrate that when you exercise, your brain mm-hmm. works more efficiently.
That's right.
So you know, making sure that you get adequate exercise, it relieves anxiety, it relieves depressive. You know, one of my professors when I was in grad school, you know, said it's really tough to be depressed if you're exercising every day. Now, some people who had depression in the class, they kind of challenged him on it. But as they challenged him on it, they also agreed that mm-hmm. they didn't exercise every day. You know, depression makes you want to engage in a particular set of behaviors, mm-hmm. none of which involves exercise.
That's right.
So, you know, they talked about if you're getting out there and you're doing some of these things, it's going to make you feel better. It's going
That's
to
right.
make you feel more positive. It's going to give you more energy. And again, all of those things are things that people with depression need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So exercise, you know, with not only the physical benefits, but also the psychological and emotional benefits are there as well.
And our bodies are meant to move.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine how much better. You know, when you go out and go for a walk, let's say around here, you know, there are a number of places you can walk. There are trails, there are lakes, there are neighborhoods. And it's really easy to walk in Florida. You know, it's pretty flat and pretty. The weather's usually pretty good. It's not like going out in a snowstorm or in a cold rain. So so you go out and you walk. And I would bet that you're going to feel better after a 30-minute walk where you see other people,
right,
where you're breathing fresh air, where you're looking at the sound, you know, you're looking at trees, you're seeing animals, you're seeing people. You're just more aware of your own existence than sitting in a living room doing nothing, sitting
right
in a sofa watching TV, you know, and getting right angry about the news or getting angry about... Or, you're just going to feel better. And I think he's right. I think it's pretty hard to be depressed if you're working out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So... All right, now the third area, the third lifestyle issue that we're going to talk about is diet.
Right.
And, you know, we've mentioned this before, and so we'll kind of recap some of it again. But what you put in your body is going to influence how your body functions. And that's not only physical, but that's psychological, that's emotional
right
as well. It's behavioral. It's going to have an impact.
We have learned so much about this in the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
I mean, the whole field of food and nutrition
right
has changed so dramatically. And we realize, I was talking to a young man the other night who is struggling with some food allergies. No, he's struggling with weight because he had some surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And so he hasn't been able to exercise,
right,
so he's gaining some weight. And we talked about that. And it's a problem he's had all of his life, battling weight. And we were talking to each other about the foods that we've eaten most of our lives and how bad they are for us.
Right.
You know, all of us ate white bread. All of us ate,
right,
you know, all these things that we shouldn't have eaten. You know,
we ate because they became more convenient.
And they're just what we ate. You
right
know, we did it mindlessly.
Right.
You know, all these foods that we ate all those years that we shouldn't have been eating. Or foods that have nutrients added to them.
Right.
Like fortified white bread. Fortified
right
cereal, and we shouldn't have been eating any of that stuff.
Right.
So, but we've learned so much in the last 2 years, and it's all good.
Right, right. So we really need to be cognizant of what we're putting in our body, because again, the old adage, you are what you eat,
yeah,
is very true.
It really is
and
true.
And so when you're eating things, toxins,
mm-hmm,
you're becoming toxic.
Yeah, our body wants fuel, and we give it calories.
Right.
You know, I mean,
empty calories,
purposeless
don't do anything calories.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Except get stored as fat.
Right. And so when we're thinking about some of the things that we'll think about with diet, it is not just the types of food that we're eating, but you know what is in those foods,
mm-hmm,
and how those foods are prepared. I like to often refer to it as foods and food-like
substances
right that we consume, because a lot of the things that we eat, especially highly processed foods,
mm-hmm,
really aren't food at all. Mm-hmm. I saw a thing the other day, and it was really funny. It was a video on Facebook, and it was talking about cheese, and it said, "Okay, cheese melts, right? When you heat cheese up, it's supposed to melt. Well, take a slice of Kraft cheese, you know, the Kraft sliced cheese, it burns."
Right. Well,
it doesn't melt, it burns.
It's also not cheese, it's cheese food.
Right.
The label says processed cheese food.
Right.
Which means it's not really cheese.
Right.
It's something else.
Right. When I used to work at a movie theater, and we used to always joke because it doesn't say butter, it says butter flavor. So they don't put butter on your popcorn. It's butter flavor they
whatever
put on your popcorn. Whatever it is.
Right.
So that is what we're consuming now. we're consuming food like products that
food substitutes.
The nutritional value is quite questionable.
I wonder what it is. I mean, but it's calories,
right,
and the problem is it's calories. It just has no value.
Right.
And if your body can't use it, it stores it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's one part. Is
mm-hmm,
you know, we really need to look in you know, the whole idea. And I know people are tired of hearing this stuff, but it's so critical. You know, whole foods, you know,
right,
you know, eating on the perimeter of the, or shopping
the
on the perimeter
store
of the grocery store, as
right
opposed to the aisles of the grocery store. Because the perimeter,
right,
of course, is where you have your, the vegetables and the produce,
mm-hmm,
and the meat section. You know, we could talk about the dairy section, but and of course the bakery section is often on the periphery too. So you got to be careful if that's sort of like the no man's land. Don't go there.
Right. That's a transition. So
that's right. Just
close your eyes, get through the bakery, and get to the food
quickly. I like how they like lure you there with
free cookies.
They put free cookies, but they also had like the flowers are there. It's like, oh, look how pretty the flowers are. Oh no, I'm in the bakery. Right. Get out of here. And it smells good. That area smells good. But anyways, so you know, shopping on the periphery is important. The other thing with food, though, is even sometimes when you're eating whole foods, you have to be cognizant of your body's reaction to some of these things. You know, there are foods that we are sensitive to. There are foods that our body doesn't process as well and as efficiently as others. I'm going to use one example of corn. Now, corn is a food, is a whole food. You can eat it as a whole food, and or you can eat it processed, but you know, it's a whole food. But for some people, because of the way that we have used corn here in our culture, here in the United States and everything, some people have just developed a sensitivity to it, you know, like peanuts. You know, when we consume a particular type of food or substances that a particular food is made from, you know, that makes it, like, again, corn, parts of corn are used in tons of different foods.
Yeah, right.
When we consume so much of a particular food, our body can create a sensitivity to it. Hmm. Our body can say, oh, that's just a little too much.
Because we're putting more than we should.
Right, okay. Right.
So and we kind of aggravate or irritate something.
Right, and that's okay. That tends to be some of the issues some people have with peanuts, because we just eat so much.
And that would be true for milk, too.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Because I had a patient recently who developed a severe milk allergy. She was probably in her 50s.
Right.
And they couldn't figure out why. And somebody did a test and found out she had developed. And it was probably because she ate a lot of dairy, too much dairy over time.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so when we expose ourselves to some of these food substances for over such a long period of time, we develop sensitivities to it. And it doesn't even take that long because our children... And again, this is different than the allergies that you may be born with.
Right.
This is different than that. Because with some children, we know that they're sensitive to and allergic to things from early on. So this is different. When you consume a particular thing so much, then you're at risk for getting a sensitivity to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why some people, even if they don't have celiacs, they're sensitive to gluten.
Still could be because sensitive, right.
If you want to know how many things have gluten in it, just start looking for the gluten-free stuff. Right. And what you find out is that if it doesn't say gluten-free on it, it has gluten in it.
Right, right.
Almost everything has gluten in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're not allergic to gluten, even if you don't have celiacs, you may still have a sensitivity to gluten. Right. And that means that it puts your body under stress.
Right.
You know, we wrote our elimination diet manual that you can get on Amazon as a Kindle book, and it's 99 cents.
Right.
So you know, if you haven't got your copy yet, we encourage you to get on there and get your Kindle book for 99 cents. But it goes through the seven usual suspects, the seven things that we tend to be sensitive to because of the way that our standard American diet is. And when we take those things out, and those things include things like soy, corn, nuts, dairy. You mentioned dairy earlier. When we start taking these things out, you notice that if you have a sensitivity to any of those things, you notice that all of a sudden you start feeling better. It doesn't take much time. You know, you take these seven things out of your diet for just say a week or two, you will see a difference. And then as you work through the elimination diet process, what you're going to realize is that as soon as you introduce something back that you have a sensitivity to, you're not going to like it that much. It may taste good, but your body's going to respond and it's going to say, whoa, what are you doing to me? And then you know. Through that diet plan, in 38 days, you're going to know which of these food types you may be sensitive to. Again, it's not an allergy to it, but right. it's a sensitivity to it that affects mm-hmm. the way that your body functions.
Yeah. And again, it's one. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Go ahead.
So when you and when you know that, and what the sensitivity does is the sensitivity creates stress in your body.
Right.
Now, stress. Your body deals with stress the way that your body deals with stress. It doesn't matter if it's psychological stress. It doesn't matter if it's dietary stress. It doesn't matter if it's a bear chasing you in the woods. Your body is going to manage stress with the same chemicals, with the same neurological response that it does the stress, with any other thing.
The stress response is the stress response. Right. Doesn't matter what triggers it.
Right.
Stress response is the same.
And so that stress response is going to increase cortisol. It's going to increase adrenaline. It's going to put you on alert. And it's going to make it difficult for you to problem solve and think and right. make decisions and all that kind of stuff. And so when we see people who, you know, sort of had this chronic inability to pay attention, chronic inability to make decisions, they seem to process information slowly. They tend to be anxious. They tend to be somewhat depressed. Well, it could be mm-hmm. that there is a food sensitivity that's going on that can be remedied simply by eliminating certain things from your diet.
Right, right.
And it's just the way that your body's responding to those foods.
You know, when we talk about diet, exercise, and sleep, and we're in the business where people come to us when they're not feeling very good,
right.
either physically or emotionally or mentally, that they don't feel very good or they're not able to do what they used to do. And they say, what can I do to mm-hmm. feel better?
Right.
That's their question. Well, it doesn't matter what your symptoms are. The answer to the question is diet, exercise, and sleep.
Right.
No matter what you have, you will feel better if you attend to these three things.
Right.
If you ignore these three things, it almost doesn't matter what medication you take.
Right.
It doesn't matter what techniques we use or right. what strategies we use. If you violate and don't take care of these three things,
right.
you're probably not going to get to where you want to go.
Right.
And so no matter what else you do, you've got to put these three things on. I mean, we can give you ways to reduce anxiety,
right.
strategies to reduce anxiety. We can give you strategies to increase positive feelings. But if you don't attend to these three things, none of that's going to buy you very much.
Right. And you know, I'm going to say something that some people may not like to hear.
Ooh.
Are you ready?
I
am amazed, regardless of how you feel about the current presidential Obama
clown.
And, well, no. I'm not even talking about the electoral
You're not talking
part.
About the election.
Wait, let's put that aside. I'm talking about the way
just
that
the political
just
atmosphere?
The political atmosphere right now.
All right.
I am amazed at how many people came out with sheer anger when First Lady Michelle Obama
right.
Started talking about we need to change our diet.
Right.
We need to change the way our kids eat.
Yeah,
now,
she took a lot of criticism.
Certainly there's some limitations to the things that she was mm-hmm. recommending. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, to the way that, you know, the attempt to say that, well, if we just address this one piece that it's going to
right.
fix all of our problems. That's
not
naive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you know, arguably, it's as naive as some people say that the war on drugs
right.
is a little bit naive. But anyways, the issue is that we in America, for some reason, we get so defensive when somebody tells us that we should change mm-hmm. something that we're doing, even if it's for our own health, for making you better, for making you healthier. Mm-hmm. You know, our diet, the standard American diet, sucks. It's bad.
Is deficient.
It's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
When I see, you know, how many times do we have patients come in and you have a 7 or 8 year old kid walking in with a bag from McDonald's with, you know, food like products, like whatever these chicken nugget things are, with whatever these other things are. They come in and they're eating these things and then they're, you know, they're depressed, they're lethargic, they just want to sit on the couch all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe, just maybe, if they were eating a little bit healthier,
mm-hmm.
maybe, just maybe, if they were exercising just a little bit more, we would see a difference. We
That's
would
right.
see a change. But first, you know, we just don't like anybody telling us what we should eat or what we should not eat, especially if it comes from a political party.
A person, right.
You know, we especially take offense then. when
if it's somebody from the other party.
Right, exactly. And maybe we should just make the argument, or maybe it would be better to make the argument that, you know what, it's just healthier.
You know, I don't think you can overstate it, but, and you know this is happening in thousands of households around the country.
Right.
If a child is sitting on the couch, watching TV, eating snack foods, you already have two of three strikes. You've already got two strikes working against you.
Right.
If that child's eating snack foods and sitting on the sofa playing video games or watching TV or doing, you're already down two.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
How can you expect to be in good health when you're doing unhealthy things? I mean, that's the message. You can't expect to be in good health if you're doing unhealthy things. What's the first thing people are told? Oh, you have to stop smoking, or you have to stop drinking. Right, because those are unhealthy things.
Right.
If you're not feeling well, it's the same with diet, exercise, and sleep.
Yeah.
You got to start sleeping. You got to start eating properly.
Right. You got to get off the couch
you
and exercise a little bit.
Do what's healthy.
And again, we just get so offended when somebody says, and I'll use words that you know, I would never use these words with a patient, but we see these words on Facebook. If you want to stop being fat,
right,
you got to do something to stop being fat.
That's right.
You got to exercise. You got to get out. And you know, we recognize, we acknowledge that that it's not easy. Right. We acknowledge that you know many times we have mental health issues. Depression mm-hmm. makes it tough to get off the couch. Depression mm-hmm. makes it tough to get out and exercise. It makes it tough to get good sleep. But it's not going to be easy.
Right.
You know, it's not, we need to sort of get out of the mindset that, let me put it this way. This is why the pharmaceutical industry is so powerful. Because what we want is we want a pill that's going to address these issues. We want to just give me something to take and that makes these feelings go away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's easy and not really as effective as some of these other things. You know, sure, you could take a pill in 2 weeks. I guess we should do that timeline, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can give you a pill, or a psychiatrist can prescribe a pill for you, and in 4 to 6 weeks, it'll be effective enough for us to see if it will take your depression away.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can start eating better and start exercising, and in 4 to 6 weeks, you're going to start feeling better.
That's right. That's right.
So,
same amount.
Which would you like for it to be?
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people, unfortunately, are going to take the medicine because the medicine doesn't require anything except for taking a pill once or twice a day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if you really want to make the lifestyle changes that you need to make, if you really want to become the person that you need to become, this mm-hmm. is where it's going to start. It's
right.
going to start with these three things: sleep, exercise, and diet.
Right. And instead of taking medication, we're not opposed to medication.
Sure.
But we're saying, in addition to, I mean, don't ask the medication to do what's impossible.
Well, but isn't it amazing? It's amazing because what people will say is, now, if I take this medicine, am I going to have to take it for the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you been asked that? Well, yes, you're going to have to take it the rest of your life unless you change something.
Unless you change everything else, right.
Change these other things, and that's going to give mm-hmm. you the opportunity to get rid of that stuff.
Right. And you have to be patient. I think you were sort of introducing that notion that you got to be patient because, look, if you're over 30 and because your metabolism has started to slow down, if you gain 2 pounds a month,
mm-hmm.
okay, that's a half a pound a week.
Right.
You can gain a half a pound a week and
not even
know why you gained it.
I mean,
that's only 8 ounces.
Right.
Okay. So that's an extra meal or an extra dessert or it's not a lot
it's
of food.
It's not much. Right.
Okay. And so let's say you gain 2 pounds a month. You gain a half a pound a week. Over a year, you've gained 24 pounds.
Right.
In a 2-year period, you've gained almost 50 pounds.
Right.
All right. Now, the more you weigh, the more calories you have to consume.
Right.
Because if you're heavier, you have to consume more calories.
That's an interesting phenomenon.
And so it's
very
circular. You know, you say, well, you know, so let's say in 2 years you gain 50 pounds, okay? Just think about it. It's going to take you probably as long to lose the 50
mm-hmm.
as it did to gain the 50.
Right.
So when you say, well, I have to lose it this summer, I don't think that's going to happen. No. That's an unrealistic expectation. So if you've gained 50 in 2 years, it's probably going to take you 2 years to lose the 50.
And not only that, but we're talking about habits again. You have gotten into the habit of eating that way.
And eating that much
right. And not exercising.
That's right. So portions.
Right.
Portions are, you know, you're used to eating. You know, there was a time when you ate one hamburger. Well, if you weigh 50 pounds more, I'll bet $1,000 that now you have to eat two hamburgers to have the same full feeling.
Okay? Satisfaction, right?
Okay, because you're going to consume more calories because you have a bigger body to fuel.
Right.
Right. And exactly. So, again, you're building the wrong kind of habits, right, and expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in that, again, the math is simple. And it all builds on itself, you know. And when we kind of put a lot of these things together, you know, when you're gaining weight, it's because you're not eating well. It's because you're not exercising. Mm-hmm. When you're gaining weight, what do people who are carrying mm-hmm. extra weight, what do they complain of? Mm-hmm. They can't sleep very well, right. Mm-hmm. Because they can't get comfortable, or right. We have issues with sleep apnea and things like that.
Yeah, so it's all circular.
It's all interconnected. Mm-hmm. And what's so frustrating, you know, I'm sure for people, is that all of it is decisions. Right. I mean, it really does for many people. And again, recognizing that there are those who struggle with it, who can't overcome some of these things and really need the support and help to overcome it. But for the majority of people, it really does come down to, I'm just going to do it.
Right.
I'm just going to make that decision and I'm just going to do it.
Right. And you make an excellent point when you say that the circularity of this thing, because if you're getting heavier, it puts more pressure on your joints.
Mm-hmm.
You have less energy. You right. exercise less. Therefore, you gain more. That you put more pressure on your joints.
Right.
Therefore, you're not exercising. Therefore, you start to develop heart disease. You develop circulatory problems. So it all does build on itself.
Yeah.
I mean, and you just at some point have to make the decision that you're going to take control. You're not going to rely on medicine. You're mm-hmm. not going to rely on others. You have to do these things. Whether you're taking medication or not, you still have to do these same things.
Right.
I mean, and we tell parents that with children with ADHD, for example, we said, well, yes, there is a medication that you can take, but you're still going to have to do these things.
You still got
to
do
whether
it.
The child takes medication or not.
Right.
As a parent or as a teacher, you're still going to have to do these things.
Right.
You can do it with or without medication, but the medication just makes the child a little bit more available.
Right.
And it's the same with this. The medication will help you a little, but you still have to make these lifestyle changes, diet, exercise, and sleep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no avoiding it.
No.
Well, there is avoiding it, but it just doesn't lead to the results that you're wanting.
You're not going to get You're not going to get the results that you hope for.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, again, it gets down to the answer to the question, will I have to be on medication for the rest of my life? Is the answer will be yes, unless you make some of these other changes.
And you're going to have to do these for the rest of your life, because if you stop eating well, if you stop sleeping well, if you stop exercising, your body is going to start to fall apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, but that's just the way we're built.
It's reality.
Mm-hmm.
So,
enjoyed this topic.
Yeah, me too.
It was fun.
So we went a little bit longer. This is so we went back to our old style of when we go on when we record on Audacity. As Mixlr keeps us to a limit.
There's a clock running.
There's a clock running that we have to, and of course we didn't this time, and so here we are. 2 minutes past an hour of recording, so that's what happens. Sorry, folks, that's what happens.
We apologize, ran a little bit over, but
we get into it sometimes.
Hope you appreciate it.
So yeah, absolutely. And so if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, you know, we'd love to hear from you. Write to us either on Facebook at The Mental Breakdown. I think it's facebook.com/Dr. Bernie actually is the URL. Or follow us on Twitter. Dr. Bernie is the handle there. Our blog, of course, thementalbreakdown.com. If you follow us on Twitter, on iTunes, please write a review. Again, thanks to
Pins
and FrogAddict85.
Right.
Those were great reviews, and we really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to rate and to send us a comment.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any questions, please send them to us. We're happy to answer them, and you know, ideas for future podcasts as well.
Right. Anything else you want to talk about, just let us know.
Yeah, so... All right. We have
some more
announcements that will be coming soon. Mm-hmm. Our ADHD course is close to being
almost
completed.
Right.
So mm-hmm. That's getting close. So it'll be available soon.
Okay.
And the book too. I have an idea about that I got to talk to you about sometime today. So.
All right.
So until next week, which will hopefully be Friday morning at 8 o'clock scheduled.
And we'll have an internet.
Hopefully.
Yes.
So until next week, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great week and forget to be afraid.